Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. This week, we spoke with Christy, whose husband was diagnosed with stage 3 HPV-related tonsil cancer in 2013. Since, she wrote a letter to herself as part of Merck's With Love Me campaign, where she talked about labels like journey, caregiver, and survivor that are all associated with a cancer diagnosis.
You know, one of the labels that kind of just always bothered me was this notion of journey, right? Everybody talks about cancer as a journey. Treatment is a journey. Your recovery is a journey. Everything is a journey. And maybe it's a personal point of view, but, you know, it is a letter to me. But I never liked this. And the reason why I didn't and I still don't, is because, you know, journey for me is something that's really positive. You know, it's kind of like getting there is half the fun. And for me, a journey is positive and it's fun and it's an adventure. And, you know, putting a label like journey on it just makes it sound soft. You know, going through cancer, I don't know anyone that would tell you it's an adventure or it's fun. You know, it's a slog. And so it just seems so passive to call it a journey. Like, can we just call it hell? Let's just call it what it is. And so I just felt that it was the wrong word attached to it. You know, the other thing that I talked about was a caregiver. You know, this was a label given to me, and I don't think of myself as a caregiver. I'm not classically trained caregiver. You know, I simply looked at myself as I said in my letter, that I was doing something that anybody else in my shoes would do. You know, I was being by my husband's side like I do every day for all the moments. You know, every day we go through everyday life moments that have no label on them, and this was just another one of those moments, and be it good, bad, normal every day. So I just, you know, that was why I never subscribed to the label caregiver. And the other one, you know, for me this wasn't necessarily for me, but more so for my husband, you know, this survivor label. And it's a positive one. You know, I think for him, having a label of survivor, for him, the way he sees it, it's like wearing a badge that said he had cancer. And for him, he didn't really want the rest of his life to be defined by that label or to be defined as a cancer survivor. He, you know, he just wants to get past this and go through his life and put it behind him. You know, I think that I take a little bit of a slight different viewpoint on this, and primarily through some of the advocacy work that I'm doing, you know, around prevention and early detection of this type of cancer. I think he's slowly coming around to this label, if you will. But you know, and I can understand where he's coming from. You know, once you put a label on it, it becomes sort of a thing that you carry in your bag for the rest of your life. And like I said, cancer was just something we wanted to get through.
So not to give the label, but caregivers also face a lot of, you know, the emotional and sometimes even physical effects from serving, you know, as a loved one to an individual facing a cancer diagnosis. How did you kind of cope with all of this? And then with that, how did you adjust and kind of move forward with what we call the new normal?
You know, truthfully, I didn't cope. At least going through the treatment, you know, going through the diagnosis, the treatment, and the recovery. You know, reflecting back, I absolutely did not cope with it. I was really in autopilot, just trying to keep up with life. You know, everything else is still moving on. You still have your job, your house to pay, or your bills to pay, your house that needs upkeep. You know, all those things still have to happen. Kids still have to get to places on time. So, you know, it was autopilot. There's not any physical or emotional room for coping, at least for me. And so, you know, what's a byproduct of that? Well, you know, I would say that emotionally or physically, I really let myself go. And, you know, I had signed up for that. I'm like, I just don't have time. This is what's going to happen. And it's not forever. This is temporary. And, you know, emotionally, I, for better or worse, because there were, you know, life was still happening, I just took a very pragmatic approach. I just said, you know, my pep talks to myself were, you know, pull up your big girl pants and do what you have to do. This is not your time. Your time is later, not now. You know, but then, later, fast forward after treatment and recovery, then I let it be my time. Then I gave myself that space that I needed to reflect and maybe get emotional about it, you know, get angry, cry, even. And kind of like fight back. And so, you know, what I did was kind of, I said, okay, how am I going to fight back? And so I decided that, I need to feel better, first of all, from the inside out. So I decided to join an advocacy group that champions for the same mission with HPV head and neck cancer that I wholeheartedly believe in, which is, as I mentioned, prevention and detection, early detection. And then on the flip side, physically, I needed to feel better from the outside in. So I decided to go back to running. I hadn't been running in a long time. It had been well over a year, probably a year and a half. I went back to running, and I really, you know, ran religiously, you know, at least four days a week. And, you know, doing that for, it was over a period of 6 months. I was able to run my first ever in my whole life. I was at the age of 43. I ran my first half marathon. I never ran in school. So this was a big moment in my life because, you know, for me, both of these things were kind of, you know, me saying, you know, take that, cancer.
Great. So looking back on your experience, what do you wish that maybe you knew back then that is something that you know now?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, right? I mean, I guess if I were to put it in one statement, it may not feel like it going through this experience. It will make you more empathetic and a more emotionally stronger person. I believe that. And you know, going through it, it's hard to see the forest through the trees, but it does change you. And for me, I firmly believe it changed me for the better.
Definitely. And so what are you hoping that maybe others take away from your letter and this campaign as a whole?
Well, you know, I think from this campaign as a whole, I really want people to get a hug at a moment when they probably need it the most. You know, if they're going through this or they're about to go through this, you know, whatever their cancer treatment and diagnosis is, or if they're going through it now, you know, this is a time when they need support and they need a hug, and I hope that this gives them that. I hope that they see that there is light at the end of the tunnel, even though in the very early stages of this, the tunnel looks really dark. And so, you know, through people or through us reading these letters and them seeing actual people, I really hope that they take away that, okay, the tunnel will get lighter. You know, for me personally with my letter, one of the reasons why I agreed to do this was when I was going through and reading a lot about caregivers and the emotional, you know, strain and looking for some support, seeing what was out there, 99% of what I was reading and seeing and was palliative care, that was just not what I wanted to read. That was not even anything that was topical to me. And so, you know, I want caregivers to know that they're important. They're an important part of this process. They deserve to know that there are other people out there that have gone through something similar they're going through, and that it's always not just about palliative care, and that they need support too. You know, for me, one of the hardest things was asking for help. You know, I needed some help with getting my kids someplace on time, or getting my husband to one of his many treatments, or picking him up, or, help me with even some of my basic chores. Like, I know it sounds silly, but, like, you know, my neighbor would come and cut my lawn for me, because while this only takes a couple, you know, maybe 2 hours out of your week, it was like I just didn't have those 2 hours anymore. So, you know, I think it's important to for the caregiver to know that they're probably going to have to ask for some help, but to know that it's okay that others are around them and they want to help, but sometimes people just don't know how to either. Everyone's kind of there saying, hey, if you need anything, let me know, but they don't know how to just go in and do it.
Right. Okay. And so with all of that, what would you say is your biggest piece of advice for a fellow caregiver who's, you know, taking care of a loved one facing cancer? I know that's a very good question.
Yeah, do I have to pick one?
No, you can give me multiple.
You know, in the beginning for me, it was listening to the care team, because at least the type of cancer that my husband had, we sat down with his primary care team that would be doing the treatment, and they took a lot of time in telling us what was going to happen, some of the side effects, how we could mitigate some of those side effects, and it was. That was so important. I mean, I took notes. I listened. I listened intently because, you know, I saw that my husband was kind of tuning out at that point because it was a lot to take in. And so that care team really became my go-to resource because they started to know my husband. They know the patient and the little nuances that could happen because of, you know, who he is or his makeup. So that care team was just about everything. Like they made me feel very, very positive that we were going to have a good outcome and it was going to be okay. And if I just listened to their steps, I could help in ways. Again, I'm not a classically trained caregiver, but there were little things I could do. So that'd be the first one. The second one I would say is, you know, advocate for the person is that you're taking care of that's going through cancer. What I mean by this is, we had a few hiccups along the way in his treatment, and this happens, right? This is it's by nobody's fault. But when these hiccups happen, you know, I would call the doctor or call the nurse and advocate for them because it was very important. Because going through cancer, you know, you're like, am I supposed to have this symptom? Is this supposed to be happening to me? And you're like, I don't know. So you know, I really had to become that the eyes and ears and say, okay, something's not right. Or even if it's not right, I'm going to flag this because to me, it doesn't feel right. So I was always sort of that advocate. And then the third piece I would say is, nothing in cancer is going to be by the book. There is no book. You can talk to other people and that have maybe had similar cancers, and they can tell you about their experience. But just as every person or human is unique, so is their cancer. And so just to understand that they're going through this, inconsistency is going to become the only consistency.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.